Carissa.
If you're planning on having lobsters this weekend, remember, don't throw them in boiling water. Use a Dutch oven. Get yourself a big can of baked beans. Eat it all, then do 15 jumping jacks, and then get in bed with a lobster. But remember, keep the elastic band on when you Dutch oven lobsters.
I see we found a new sponsor.
We sponsored Dutch oven lobsters. All right. Still, my friend working on the T-shirt.
Yeah.
Sent me two prototypes. Because well, it's such a bizarre concept. I'm having trouble with the whole thing. Do I need to show the lobster in bed? Do I not show the lobster?
I thought we already saw him. You see the claws hanging out of the pot?
No, because he's in bed and you're farting. Are we on the air?
Okay. We're playing with the metaphor. You don't go literal, John.
Okay. We're adults being paid to talk about this. Oh my gosh! It'll take off like a wildfire. Here we go. Unique dangers of a Washington State's measles outbreak. So they've tracked it down to folks from a foreign country. Where did they come in from?
Ukraine.
Oh boy.
Yeah, but it's
Dobreden.
Somebody was. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Dobreden. Somebody was in Ukraine and came here. And I don't know if this was in Portland or Clark County, but they're basically, you know, sister cities.
Mm-hmm.
And because the Northwest is the hotbed of anti-vaccination, there are more. The Pacific Northwest has the highest rate of unvaccinated children. I think it's up to like 10%. That mm-hmm. includes Alaska as well, they say. Idaho, Washington, and Oregon. And what's interesting about this is I understand that there are people far on the right and people far on the left that don't like these vaccination people that are insisting on vaccinating people, this anti-vaccine mm-hmm. crowd. But I was puzzled by why it would be worse in Washington State. Well, interestingly enough, I circled this, John, for you.
Mm-hmm.
In the Washington Post article, they say libertarian-leaning lawmakers, again, this is in Washington State, have bowed to public pressure to relax state laws to exempt virtually any child whose parents object.
Uh-huh.
So I thought this is an interesting example.
I wonder what libertarian lawmakers are which ones?
They don't identify. But uh-huh. the idea is it did, and I just sort of marked that for you. Libertarians, I think, it would make sense to be a libertarian and say, nobody's going to tell me what to do with my child.
Right.
And so that kind of insistence, that political stance, can put us in this kind of danger, unless mm-hmm. you yourself are an anti-vaxxer yourself, John.
Well, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. Okay. First of all, I like the fact that states work on this. It's not the federal government. Good job, everybody there. Let's keep it in the states. 50 states, it's not mandatory that you get it. The only state, there's two or three states, Mississippi and West Virginia. West Virginia is the most vaccinated state. Now, the reason it's the most vaccinated is because they've eliminated religious and personal, and they only let you have medical exemptions. But in order to get the medical exemption, it's very difficult.
Wow.
So you can't sneak out one of those three doors in West Virginia. So West Virginia, the highest vaccinated
state.
Is
that right? Because they are very Catholic, which I would think, and I don't know, I mean, there's no reason why Catholicism has anything to do with religious exemptions of vaccines, but that is interesting if they actually don't allow for any religious exemption. The key, though, is that most states allow for those two of those three,
right?
Medical and religious.
Mm-hmm.
Washington is one of, I think, nine states that allows for a philosophical objection.
Right.
And philosophical means, as they point out, just about anything. My philosophy is such that, and because of that, we're in worse shape. And so that quote about taking off like a wildfire, that's Clark County Public Health Director. He's the one who says measles is exquisitely contagious,
mm-hmm.
and if you have an under-vaccinated population, it can take off like wildfire. And that's the real danger,
mm-hmm.
and it's why Washington State is so unique. And they do quote a Seattle mother, Bernadette Pager, P-A-G-E-R. Mm-hmm. She's co-founder of the state's main anti-vaccine group, Informed Choices, Choice Washington. She says we shouldn't be using the term outbreak. It's really inbreak because it all happens within the community. And she thinks that basically they're trying to make you afraid
mm-hmm.
of what measles can do. After all, most of us got measles. We didn't die. So what's the problem?
Right.
They talked to one woman, just to wrap up this article, says the problem is that the anti-vaxxers, they make you afraid and the other side makes you feel stupid. So if you're in favor of vaccines, they'll tell you, oh, well, you know, you're just, if you don't like vaccines, you're stupid. Mm-hmm. And if you do like vaccines, oh, you've just been, you know, cowed by a vaccine industry.
Well, it's an ugly arranged marriage between two separate groups that have met in the middle to not vaccinate their kids. It's the anti-government people.
Yes.
And it's the anti-big business, anti-big pharma. Yes. So they believe big pharma.
So you get right and left.
Right. So they believe that big pharma has gotten in bed with the government, and in order to get and boost profits, they're telling you to get these six or seven shots, and you get mercury and all this other stuff that goes into the kid, and then my kid's now autistic. So you're able to get both sides. The people that have lived over in Eastern Washington that are sick of government, don't want government telling them what to do. Yeah. They're over there, and they don't want to be bothered. And then the other people that are highly educated but poorly informed, they're the ones like that lady in Seattle who feels as if these vaccines are some sort of thing. If you probably dug in, you'd see that maybe she feels it's big pharma or big government. You're going to blame one or the other, that someone's hiding the science from us, right?
And, again, representing the big bipartisan middle, you have a Republican from Vancouver who's offering a bill that would not allow for exemptions, would restrict exemptions to just religious and medical. But there will be a committee hearing tomorrow, apparently, and Pager, the anti-vax campaigner, said that her group is arranging experts to testify. Among those expected to speak, this I am quite disappointed to...
Some celebrity?
Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Oh, yeah.
Who has argued that there is a government conspiracy about the safety of vaccines.
The only good thing about that is no one will be able to understand him.
John, you are... That is mean-spirited.
Have you heard him?
Of course I've heard him.
What's he sound like?
But I think it's a medical condition, and it's not fair to make fun of somebody.
I didn't make fun.
It'd be like somebody making fun of your dyslexia. It's off limits, John.
Oh, really? As of when? 30 seconds ago? All right.
Anyway.
It's also Kennedy's the one doing. He did all the pipeline stuff. He was out protesting that. It's easy to live a life like that when you got that kind of trust fund. All right, let's see. We're going to talk all about measles and explore vaccination. No.
Well, the FAI guy just did us a service by showing us how easy just to track down what level of vaccination or non-vaccination you have at your particular elementary school. And it's no surprise that a lot of private and religious schools have very high numbers, like 10%. But you can easily just check your own school to see where it stands.
Yeah, I would say that most people go in there. They've heard something about the number of shots. Maybe they try to have the shots give it not all in one, you know, fell swoop. And they just sort of think, well, I'll just cover my bases here and I'll just have them get like two shots and come back in 2 weeks and get two more shots or something like that. Because I think they give you like seven or something right there in a row.
Yeah. It is for mumps, measles, and
rubella.
Yeah, rubella. Yeah. I thought that was measles.
Anyway,
Seattle, just Seattle Waldorf Schools, Seattle campus, 22.5% have vaccine exemptions.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah, that's the highest in the state.
Yeah, that's good. A lot of what does it cost? 20 some thousand bucks to go there?
I don't know.
Kooky crazy. Let's say there's a woman accusing Justin Fairfax of Seattle of sexual assault. She comes forward, so she's actually gotten the same attorneys that Blasio Ford got.
Yeah, but after, it sounds like he got the same attorneys that Kavanaugh got. So basically, we're reliving through that that clash.
So she's come out now, and she has laid it out that they went there. There was consensual kissing, but then they went to the hotel room, and when they're in the hotel room, more kissing, and then he forced her to have oral sex with him. So she says that she told somebody this story back in 2017, and it wasn't until...
She posted it on Facebook without identifying. It was somewhat similar to that case here in Olympia, where I think it was Joe Fain who was eventually outed, but a woman said there was a legislator who did this.
Uh-huh.
And then after the Me Too movement, she came out and says, well, I already mentioned this, but I'm going to mention his name now. And that's still in dispute. That was he lost his election, so there's no more investigation. But there, it's a he said, she said situation. And that's the case here.
And she also went to the Washington Post, Fairfax's accuser.
Yes.
Went to the Washington Post. They said they did work and weren't able to find anything.
They couldn't find any corroborative evidence, so they decided not to go public.
Couldn't find any corroborating evidence with Ford either, could they?
Well, the thing is, in terms of the investigation, that came out because he was nominated for a Supreme Court.
Right.
They didn't print anything earlier. They were criticized because they didn't print anything earlier because he wasn't a high a profile enough a character, I suspect. So at this point, she happens to be an associate professor, an expert in black history at Scripps College in California. She spent years advocating for victims of sexual assault, and she was actually working, I think, at a rape crisis center at the time this happened. And she said that she was, like a lot of women you hear, she was so humiliated by the experience. Here she's spending her life trying to fight this kind of stuff, and then she herself was a victim of it. And the question is this any kind of political vendetta? At this point, she says, I'm a proud Democrat. This has nothing to do with politics. This is what happened to me. And, you know, I don't know how this is going to be resolved one way or the other. You've got lawyers on each side, but it really wasn't a legal decision that was made in the Kavanaugh-Blasey Ford standoff. It was a political one. It was just votes. And I don't know what will happen in this particular case.
So Representative Bobby Scott, he's a Democrat there in Virginia, was made aware of the sexual assault allegations against the lieutenant governor back in 2017. That's more than a year before. So apparently they had wind of it, and now it comes out. She's not out to get the guy, she says?
Well, she's gone. Yeah, well, I mean, I think she wants this to be known.
Okay. So I assume he has to step down. Governor has to step down. Yeah. Right? Lieutenant governor
Think all those things. Now I don't know if any of that's going to happen. I think that Northam has benefited from the fact that now the waters are so muddied that he might survive. No one thought he'd survive this long.
Well,
it's crazy.
Well, you should pick them off one at a time, like birds on a wire. If you are the, you know, political identity politics, if you want to be able to do identity politics the way they do. So the one guy's a racist.
Who's they, John?
They're Democrats. The one guy's a racist. The other guy is a sexual abuser and assault of women, so he hates women. And then the other guy is also a racist. So you knock all three out. So they have to.
But
the question is, if they want to be able to burn these bodies at the pyre of political identity.
Like you do?
Well, these guys.
Seem to be taking delight in this, despite the fact that
I
want to
see
the
consistency. I just want to see consistency.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
If consistency burned the other way.
No, Tom.
John.
I don't care about the party on this. I just want to see consistency. I love the fact that they're caught, because now, if they do throw all three out, then there's a Republican by the name of Kirk Cox. I've always been a big fan of his.
Yeah, I'm sure
he's the Speaker of the House.
Did he do blackface you particularly like?
I like the fact that he's run since 1990. He's married. He's got four kids, okay?
Oh, therefore, he couldn't have done a Diana Ross impersonation, huh? Come on. That's the weird thing. I think right now, to be a politician anywhere, but be a politician in Virginia right now, you better be clean as a houndstooth, as the old expression goes.
He's 61 years old. He's conservative. He's served since, oh my gosh, for 29 years.
Hey, just your kind of guy.
Ugh, I hate
the problem is, I'm wondering, because I mentioned this before, I have a son-in-law who's Virginian. I want to ask him, is this like just general knowledge that people throw these kinds of parties, at least in the 80s and 90s? Now, he wasn't, you know, barely born by that point, but
Virginia
still
is normally a state, a commonwealth that doesn't have all these sort of things. This is not normal for them.
Well, except that they were part of the Confederacy, and I'm wondering, they were the capital of the Confederacy in Richmond, if there is a kind of underground where these are relatively common or not. It is fascinating to me that to have two public officials. I would assume that Bob Ferguson and Jay Inslee have never done blackface.
Ah.
And I don't know if that's because the state of Washington is nowhere near Virginia, or if this just really is a weird accident that two top officials in Virginia happen to have both done this. I don't know how common it is.
Let's go to Al Sharpton. The Reverend says,
whether you blackface in Virginia or blackface in San Antonio, you are a blackface. Why would we march against statues of dead folks and not hold accountable living folks today?
Yeah. So we're going to come after Jimmy Kimmel and Jimmy Fallon. I get those two.
I know you're on that.
I love it, Tom, because you want to watch video of Jimmy Kimmel.
Why are you so mad about
it? I'm not
this?
Mad about it. I just want to see if consistency.
No, you don't, because if Jimmy Kimmel was a conservative, you wouldn't bring him up. The fact that Jimmy Kimmel's gone political, and so now you're going after him in his pre-political
Let's
days.
Take the politics out of it. Here we go. Ready?
Though.
Let's take the politics out of it. Somebody wears blackface, good or bad?
I can't imagine
bad.
When you'd say good.
Okay, it's bad, right? It's bad.
Yes.
Jimmy Kimmel puts on blackface. Good or bad?
Funny but bad.
Okay, well, all right. Now we start. Oh, do you really want to make those distinctions?
I don't know. Because I had a great conversation with G. Scott about this.
Okay.
And G. Scott has very informed opinions about blackface and the impact in the black community. And he acknowledged that he thinks there is a I asked him this. And I'm open to persuasion one way or the other.
Okay, so
if
Jimmy
you are
Kimmel
imitating, if you are imitating a black person. So like I mentioned, like Diana Ross, if you were going to imitate Diana Ross and put blackface on Diana Ross, is that different than, say, what Northam has been accused of? And he claims it's not him, but just, you know, going the old-fashioned minstrel show kind of blackface with the white
like
lips.
Like an Al Jolson. Next, so he's like imitating Al Jolson.
Well, no, not in that case, because he's standing next to a KKK guy.
Okay.
So the question is, are you referencing that? Is there a distinction? And G said, yes, it's still wrong, but there are gradations.
Okay, so
and
then
so
therefore...
when an entertainer is taking on... Karl Malone, people may not remember him now, but he was a huge superstar in the NBA at the time.
Yeah.
With I don't even know what he was mocking. You just showed me the image of him. But the idea is that do you get some permission for that or not? And that's, I don't know, what was Jimmy Kimmel doing?
Jimmy Kimmel was dressing up as Moses Malone. Jimmy Fallon dressed up like Chris Rock and came
like
on
Chris
the Regis
Rock.
And Kathie Lee show and wore blackface and did a really good Chris Rock.
Yeah.
Now, so the difference is so therefore,
is there
according to the I'm imitating somebody clause, then the attorney, not the attorney general, he's the one that had the sex.
The attorney general is Harry.
Oh, the attorney general. The attorney general was imitating his favorite rap star.
That's right, Michael Jackson.
So therefore, he's okay.
Well, no, it's not okay, but there are
gradations. He was doing an imitation of somebody famous.
What he admitted to was Michael Jackson.
Yes. But No. The governor did Michael Jackson.
That's right.
Okay. The attorney general imitated his favorite rapper.
So they both So they both were doing that.
Okay.
And that is not quite as heinous as appearing in blackface next to a KKK Klansman.
Okay.
When you're just the generic.
But
it still makes it all wrong.
Oh.
Now here's another thing that G. Scott said I thought was an interesting distinction. He is on the road to forgiveness for the attorney general, but not the governor, because I heard him say this on a show last night. Because he said that even when he did it as a college student, 19 years old in 1980, he says, even then, I knew it was wrong.
Oh.
And so G. Scott says, there he's taking acknowledgement of that, not just saying, well, I didn't know any better, and now I know better 35 years later. The fact that he says, and even then,
I knew
it was wrong. And so G, in his... Everyone has different parameters by which to judge people. He's making distinctions.
Is it racist to wear blackface?
I can't imagine a situation that it's not, except there are a couple.
If you're a Hollywood superstar, then it's okay.
Well, Spike Lee did a really interesting movie about this whole idea, and it was sort of like a parody of a minstrel show.
Uh-huh.
And I can imagine a context in which you do something like that. Also, remember, I think Robert Downey Jr. did blackface in that comedy about actors portraying soldiers. That was
he did.
I think he might have even got an Oscar nomination or something for it. That was well received, but mighty controversial, I can imagine, in these times.
All right. We'll look for the I'm imitating somebody clause to get yourself out of those.
No. I don't want to misrepresent G. Scott. You don't get out of it. Are there gradations?
I'm trying to misrepresent you.
Well, wipe off that skirt.
Here we go. Michael Shubenko going to be the know-it-all quiz tomorrow. You guys are going to do the quiz without me?
No.
Yeah. This is, Curly, read the script. I'm out tomorrow, so the know-it-all quiz, but you still get a chance to win, brought to you by Michael Shubenko this week. Prize for two tickets to see Seattle Operas of the Revolution of Steve Jobs.
Steve Jobs, that's right. It's a brand new opera, I think commissioned by Seattle Opera. Very exciting.
So we're giving these away without you having to win anything?
Yes. No. You still have to call. That's the way most stations do it, you know.
They just give it away. I just don't give it away.
That's right.
Speaking of somebody who just doesn't give it away.
I don't know.
Because I'm classy.
That's all I have. Yeah.
Anything for a segue.
I started down Segway Lane. I realized it was too tight. Cars parked on both sides. Couldn't turn around. Kept right on going.
All right,
Rachel, here we go. A couple stories. Here's the way it works behind the scenes, everybody. Jacob does a lot of work at night, and he finds a bunch of stories. He then forwards them to Tom, myself, and Rachel. Rachel then goes through the pile, and she's like, I don't care about that. But I do like these two stories.
Hey,
so
I did say that I like two other stories, but did you hear my passive aggressiveness in the email when I went, I guess I like these stories.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, there's a second layer to
pitch,
this.
Yeah, but she tried to pitch us a story about truffles. I mean, come on.
We shot that thing down.
I know.
I heard it on Seattle's Morning News.
Yeah, I was
and?
Like, no. Okay. I'm glad we didn't do it. Yeah. People taking their dogs out to go truffle hunting. No, we shot that thing down. That thing that lived like about for 10 seconds.
I didn't think you guys would want that, but, you know, I tried to give you one of my finer pieces.
We appreciate that, but we don't like getting undercut.
Yeah, we don't want some other news.
I know.
We want fresh content.
Yeah. Okay. We don't want stories for the culinary elite.
So I'll tell you, here's the story that we also liked these stories, so that's why we're all here to talk about it. All right, first one. When is a surgeon too old to operate? And the question was, would you let somebody operate on you if they were 74 years old?
Yeah, it really makes you miss Doogie Howser, you know? Like, what happened to all the 12-year-old doctors? So basically what I learned from this article in the New York Times is that it's very hard to become a surgeon. Then as soon as you do become a surgeon, they're like, cool. Well, we're not going to check on you for the rest of your career. So you basically keep going and going, and there's no self-policing within the industry. And as you can imagine, I mean, the same thing comes up when you want to take the keys away from your elderly parent, and they don't want to stop driving. So the same thing happens, except for surgeons tend to think a lot of themselves. This is what the article said. I don't actually know any surgeons, but I'm sure
they're very full of themselves.
They're very full of themselves.
We all know.
And it said, you know, they really don't want to have the scalpel taken out of their hand. But they tell a story at the beginning in the article of an 80-year-old doctor who was not performing the surgery, but he was in the room. He was asked to observe, and he fell asleep. Mm-hmm. And when he was woken up, he said, it was pretty boring. That's why he fell asleep. But the nurse tattletailed on him. And within a couple of days, he was in the office of the administration, and they were suggesting that he cut down his hours. And he got very upset. And then they said, well, there are these new evaluations that can be done, for example, at Mount Sinai Hospital for an aging surgeon program. Will you go take this? And he said, no, get out of my office. Well, a couple days later, he was boarding a plane, and he happened to see the pilot, who was also quite aged. And he saw this pilot, and he thought, that guy is going to fly this plane, and suddenly had an epiphany like, okay, now I see how other people look at me. And he became the first doctor evaluated by Sinai Hospital's aging surgeon program. So there are only a few hospitals in the country that have made this mandatory, that when you hit a certain age, you have to go through this program to see if you can still see and hear and if you have all of your cognitive abilities about you. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, everybody else just keeps coasting on. So the study said that, you know, some people at 75 are totally fine to be a surgeon, but some are not. Mm-hmm. So people are pushing for this because do you want to go and have surgery with an 80-year-old doctor who maybe doesn't have a steady hand?
Well, let's just do the pilot real fast. Yeah. Starting at the age of 40, they make you retest. At 65, they force you to retire.
Oh, as a pilot.
As a pilot.
Well, now, how did this guy just see an 80-year-old pilot?
He didn't. He's 80. He's so old, he didn't know how old a pilot was. He said, that guy's so old, I don't want him flying
me. He was
me.
48?
I didn't want him flying me. So the guy had to be younger than 65.
Mandatory? So no
mandatory
pilot
retirement,
is over 65?
No.
None. Well, maybe he was a very gray and aged-looking 64-year-old.
Yeah, or a really tired 28-year-old.
Yeah.
65, that seems way too young.
It's too bad, Tom. So sad.
For all pilots, you can still pilot a plane. You just can't fly a commercial airline.
You can't fly a commercial airline.
Wow, that's amazing.
And by the way, that's good news for my son, because there's so many pilots right now that are going to be hitting 65 pretty soon. They're going to be completely wiped out. There's going to be a huge dearth of pilots, and they're going to be able to they'll hire just
about
anyone.
Your son wants to be a pilot?
Oh, bad. So here's the way, the other part of it was, I looked up how many surgeons have gotten sued. And if you're, now, of course, if you're practicing longer, 55 and older, you're sued 49% of the time. Some of them have been sued twice. So you could say, well, the hospital doesn't set up standards, but somebody comes in and sues you, and then possibly you lose your license, or your insurance gets too high, or you lose your ability to work at that hospital.
Well, so what's the average rate? If you're telling me that surgeons at what, over 65, over 55,
so if you're
are
under
sued
40,
half the time for malpractice?
Yes.
What?
Half the time?
The likelihood of getting sued appears to grow 49.2% of a physician aged 55 or over reported having claims filed against them. If you're 40 or younger, male physician's 39.2% being sued.
This is why I don't have surgeries.
40% and 50% basically. So it's only a 10%. Because if you know any doctors, malpractice, you know, insurance is the most expensive thing and frankly puts them out of business to begin with. So you're already sued 40% of the time. So then 50% of the time is not like...
Wait a minute, hold on a second. Older doctors being sued. Okay, it says 8.2% of physicians under the age of 40 have been sued. So as you hit 55, of course you do it more, you're likely chance of, you know, having problems.
You'd probably do thousands more. How concerned are you about a surgeon in his age?
I just, you know what I do?
Trust?
No, I just, you do sort of, you know, you group source it. I always say, well, who should I go to? Oh, you want to go to this guy.
Yeah.
Everybody knows, oh, Mike, I got the best. I got a great hip guy. My hip guy was great.
So, John, you don't like government overreach. Do you think the government should insist that hospitals at the age of, say, 65, I'm going to pick an arbitrary age, if you want to continue to do surgery, you need to then, you know, take another bar exam,
no,
for instance?
Why would you centralize anything? Why wouldn't you just...
Well, because I thought you approved of the pilots.
Well, people in this article were saying, why not do it to every doctor? Every 10 years, you would have to take a test, because there's people at 40 and 50 who might not be good to do anymore. And they were also saying, don't force them to retire. They can teach, they can mentor, they can do research, which the guy at the beginning of the article ended up doing, even though he passed his test.
Yeah. I would just say this. If you're crappy, let the public do it on a Yelp sort of thing. Bad surgeons, you quickly get a reputation for being lousy. Yeah, if you get the federal government in, then you're going to get JAMA in there. You're going to get all these lobbyists come in there in order to influence them to write a law that benefits them and has a direct benefit against someone else.
I just think Yelp for doctors.
Yelp. It does exist already.
I know, but it's not good.
No.
It is good.
It is not, because it's unreliable. You might go in for surgery and you go, hey, my leg hurts. Your leg was always going to hurt. Does it hurt more because of the surgery or less?
You keep clicking down to get somebody giving them 5 stars.
You're going to turn into an anti-vaxxer pretty soon,
John. No.
Be careful.
No, it's great. Have
people
you ever seen...
don't know enough about what they're talking about when it comes to the intricacies.
Have you ever shopped for a physician on Yelp or seen reviews?
I have, for a dermatologist.
Too. I did, too.
Yeah, and?
It's great. Well, people are like, he's kind, he's fun, he's great.
I heard that. What did Rachel think?
You know, I went to someone who was highly recommended, and I really hated him. Honestly.
So there you go.
But it was because of his personality.
Yes, I know.
He had a really high rating on Yelp, and maybe he was good at his job, but I couldn't stand him. And then I had another friend go, and she didn't like
Yelp.
Him either.
No, that's you.
That's my slogan. That's you. That's Yelp. You know what's on Yelp? My friend sent this to me yesterday. McNeil Island Prison is reviewed on Yelp. One guy said, great place to go for lunch, but don't bring the kids.
The other one, you want to read
Unless
a really funny
yours.
One? Go to look up Leavenworth Prison on Yelp.
Okay.
It is hilarious.
Yeah. I'm going to quit my job and just look up prisons.
Yeah. Well, they treat it like a hotel. The guy goes, they couldn't have been more accommodating.
Yeah.
And boy, were they friendly. At one point, I got an opportunity to be touched. So they walk you through, like, the guy at the door asked me to take my clothes off and then had sex with me. It was great.
A-plus frisk. Yeah. Jumpsuits are itchy, though.
Hey, we ran out of time on electric cars. But
that's
that
good,
means you get a chance to come back later.
Yes!
Yeah.
I'll be sending
tomorrow.
You an email.
You'll be back tomorrow on a Friday. It'll be a special Friday edition of Rachel Bell.
Pitch another story about...
I'm sorry. I don't work on Fridays.
Or pitch another story about people going truffle hunting with their dogs. That could be your last one. All right, we're not going to play your out music.
Why not?
Hold on.
Because he has to find it.
Right back. The Online Trading Academy text line, 98973, is a great way to get in touch with us here at the Tom and Curly Show. You can also roll in the other door, the Dutch door, Tom. That's the door that allows you to come through at mynorthwest.com. Why a Dutch door? You know what they did? What the origins of that is?
No, let me see. It has no handles.
No, it means the top and the bottom are separated. Now, why would they have the top of the door you could open and the bottom of the door you keep closed? You know why?
So you could deliver your milk easily without having to open the whole door.
Keeps farm animals out.
Allows
the wind to come
you
in. You get the circulation, but you don't have your chickens and your goats and your dogs and stuff coming in. So that's your Dutch door right there. That's what we've got
really?
Going on. All right, let's see. A Harvard top astronomer says that, that's an alien ship. That is not a comet, because if it was a comet streaking through the sky at 196,000 miles an hour, it would have a tail. There would be something coming off the back of it. It's not. He's done the research, and he's going out on a limb, and he doesn't care if people think he's cuckoo.
He happens to be the chairman of Harvard University's astronomy department, so this is not just any random cuckoo.
Right.
This is a brilliant cuckoo, and most of the scientists in his field think that he's lost his marbles, in effect. This came out a few months ago, obviously, that this guy claimed that we have something outside our solar system that is rushing through our solar system, and it's going so fast that he figured it might be what he called a light sail, something from an extraterrestrial alien spaceship,
mm-hmm.
in effect, the most outrageous kind of suggestion there is. And most of his fellow scientists thinks that he's off his rocker, so to speak. And this article, this profile under the Style headline in Washington Post says that he doesn't care. And they do an interesting profile. He grew up on an Israeli farm.
Mm-hmm.
That he didn't grow up thinking the academia was the intellectual elite. He doesn't have any kind of false airs about what he does. But I like his approach. I think he may be dead wrong as well. But they do say that he says, okay, so what's the worst thing that can happen to me? If they determine that what my theory is bogus, mm-hmm. that it's not supportable, they what? They're going to take my administrative duties away? Because when you're a chairman of a department, really the only thing difference between what you and the other scientists do is you're also responsible for the administrative aspect mm-hmm. of the chair. So he says it's no big deal. And he says that what the problem with science today is that it's full of overly conservative, quiescent scientists, mm-hmm. that they all play by the rules and nobody does anything daring. And so right. he's going to daringly make a suggestion. He says, once I find evidence that proves me wrong, I'll easily withdraw this. But until you do, I'm going to throw out this fascinating theory. And he seems to be relishing all of the attention that he's suddenly gotten because of this cockamamie suggestion.
He is saying that what else could the thing be? If it was a comet, it would show signs of how it's moving through the atmosphere
yeah.
and the force that it would be creating. And he points to the fact that there would be a tail. So he says, okay, so we're going to discount that. It's moving so fast, and apparently it can speed up and slow down. He's also talking about the shape of it. What else would explain what this thing is, since it doesn't appear to be that?
Yes. And just because, and what scientists say is, yeah, we do not yet know what it is. We have not identified it, and because it went through our solar system so quickly, we don't, it's not like something you can hang on and study. But they say, but you then don't come up with a crazy kind of theory. Yeah, it could be an alien spaceship. It's like, well, yeah, I suppose, because we don't know what it is. But just because you don't know what it is doesn't mean that's a likely thing that it is. That's the argument. And believe me, for us, for popular science people that are just or that are not doing the real heavy lifting of science, mm-hmm. we're fascinated by this. We want to believe him. We think that would be great.
Well, a lot of scientists spent time in jail or been in prison or possibly killed.
Well,
I mean, Galileo spent some time in the old hooch gal town.
He's not facing Galileo's fate. After all, he says he'd only lose his chairmanship, the administrative duties.
But I think to be spurred by the rest of those Harvard intellectuals would hurt just as much as being in prison. Oh,
right. They love their administrative duties.
They do. William F. Buckley says, I'd rather be governed by the first 10 pages of the Boston phone book than the Harvard, the administrators of Harvard. Yeah, the Harvard faculty.
Or was it Yale?
I think he picked Harvard because okay. he was saying about Boston. I think he did Boston and Boston Yellow Pages or White Pages. All right. Let's see. Stuff to talk about. We come back. Do I have 10 seconds to try to keep people listening? Yes or no, Andrew?
Nope. Okay.